You are listening to show number 46 of the Burnham & Dodge Art Hour.
Yes! Well, here we are again, folks.
Weren't we just here? Goodness, it seems like we were just in here the other day.
I think you made it other day, but I think you're right about that.
Well, through the magic of internet podcasting,
right.
You know, you'll be able to listen to us whenever you want.
Isn't that
wonderful?
It doesn't
have to be this month or next month or even last week.
But don't wait too many months, though. Get more of those weeks in there.
Hey, welcome to the Burnham & Dodge Art Hour, where
that's
we talk
right.
about
the
art
of the future
and anything loosely related to it.
That's it.
I'm Carl W. Thiel, and you're...
I'm Ken W. Morgan. And don't ask me what the W is, I won't tell you.
Wasaluna.
Yes.
Wasaluna.
That's a good one. I've never heard that one.
Isn't that where that? They have that insurance company, you know, like out in the middle of America?
Right, Wasaluna. It looks... graphic design of a roof line or a gable or eave or something.
Exactly.
Wasaluna.
Hey, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You know, in addition to our very special guest, we'll be featuring a question from
a
listener.
One there.
We got a special Ken will relate. Hey, get this, by the way. You know, normally, I forgot this is how stupid I am lately.
That happens once in a while.
Oh, man,
lately.
I tell you. About two or three shows ago, we ran out of the 30 Ways Photography is Good for You.
Oh, that's right.
And so I'm going over the old shows for our outtake show, which you see, if you go down, scroll down on our list, you'll see the outtake show. And I found out that there are Can I count?
Yes.
I'm an English major, remember.
You can definitely count. I don't know what
There were
what,
two but. Of the 30 ways that you did not ever relate.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, somewhere along the line, it just kind of fell through the cracks,
wow.
apparently.
Wow. Must be some white
Well, you
crack.
Did the seventh one twice.
That's how it happened.
So
that's how I have somebody going, well, that's number 14
so,
it's 7-2 times.
We made
it?
This whole big thing about, you know, how lucky our guest was that she was there for our 30th way, and we really were only on 28.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to take that wooden token back, aren't we?
We are going to have to.
We're going to get it back.
We'll see her on the 10th.
We had to get it back.
That was Kate Parzik.
That's right.
Right? And she's got it. Of course, by the time this show goes up, it'll be beyond the 10th.
That's right. Probably beyond the 20th for that.
Whatever. But we are going to have one more of the 30 ways photography is good for you.
We're going to get it in here tonight.
We'll also take a break for a song or two, plus the one, the only Mr. Answer Man is making yet again a marvelous answerable performance.
Man, you got to love that guy. I don't know where he gets those answers from, but I guarantee you one thing, they don't come out of no Cracker Jack box.
Never. We don't know how he does.
That's right. We don't know how
But
he does.
He's a very special guest, and it doesn't mean that he rides that yellow bus, you know, in the afternoons.
Oh, the long one or the short one?
Is Mr. Oren Langell.
There he is.
He's
right
a
here.
Photojournalist.
On my right-hand
and he's
side.
Been all over the place.
We have a photojournalist who has been all over the place.
He's been all over the place.
I want to get off on the wrong foot, but Ken, I'm on your left-hand side.
Left-hand side? Is he on my left-hand side?
He is on your left.
You had a problem with that when
we had Josie DiVincenzo
on. Why does everybody seem to be on the wrong side, on my right-hand side, on my left-hand side?
As long
side.
As they're not on his wrong side, you know, emotionally.
Yeah, that could be a problem. Psychology, you're right.
So welcome, Oren. Say hello to the ladies and germs.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me here, by the way.
Glad to have you.
Now, you are a photojournalist.
Right, a photojournalist.
And so for those people who aren't exactly sure what that is, what is a photojournalist in the 21st century?
To me, a photojournalist is somebody that actually is documenting reality. And what I try to do is document what's going on in the in social and ecological injustice. Take photographs of that. Get that documentation out. So hopefully people will see what the truth is. And I really don't believe in objectivity. I believe in telling the truth. Mm. I don't necessarily go along with that anybody can really be objective. So we live in a society that mass media is controlled by very few corporations these days, and they say they're objective, and I tend to disagree with them.
Now, Oren did not show up by himself.
Oh, no, he
did. He did bring along...
on my left-hand side.
...his spouse, and her name is Ann Peterman.
Very nice to be here. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming along. Do you, Ann, have a background in photography as well?
I have gotten involved in photography because of tailing along with Oren on all of these trips and observing how he takes photos.
Good.
And So I think predominantly lately I've been taking photos of Oren taking photos.
Documenting the photojournalist.
Yes, so I've got a lot of photos of Oren taking photos. But it's been a really interesting experience and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, you also have a background in art and you're also a writer and you help document.
Well, that really helps, especially
put words
on this
to some
show.
Of my photos.
Oh, good.
On this show, that's a good thing to have a background.
It's nice
art
to have someone help you.
And writing, you know.
Now, Oren, you trained as a photojournalist at Manhattan's International Center of Photography with Cornell Kappa. Now, what's his famous brother?
Robert Kappa.
Now, who was Robert Kappa?
Yeah, a little thing that had to do with a pepper, a caper.
Oh, Robert Kappa was, in many people's eyes, Robert Kappa was one of the best war photographers
in
the world.
World War II.
World War II. And he actually, he was somebody that had a very intense political background, and he was trying to photograph things from the horror of war, not to glorify it or anything like that. And he ended up as a very famous photographer in World War II. He also shot in the Spanish Civil War, where he took some really famous photographs. Mm-hmm. But in 1954, he stepped on a landmine in Indochina, he was blown up.
Oh, man. Now, you have been all over the place. He's constantly in the middle of a struggle somewhere. It's like, do you inject yourselves into these places, or is it by happenstance? How do you end up there?
How do you get there?
Well,
let me say,
okay, you've been in Chile, in Brazil, Nicaragua, Chile. Paraguay. I mean, and of course, Canada is a hotbed of revolt.
Oh, man, constantly revolting up there.
And the United States, here in the United States.
Man, those folks are brutal up there.
Sorry, but how do you end up getting to these places?
Well, a lot of different ways. One that I've kind of taken a lot. One of the things I decided to do in life was to become a photojournalist. And since the days of the big newspapers and magazines were no longer around.
Oh, yeah, you're right about
and
that.
And I didn't really want to work for any kind of a news agency that had myself with had a leash around my neck.
Oh, yeah.
I ended up working with different non-governmental organizations or smaller organizations that basically let me go to different places, take photographs, and it was part of my job. Nobody told me what I could or couldn't photograph. And I ended up, because of my political feelings and getting along with the people I photographed, was very much, I don't know, Anne, what would you say? That people
you had access.
I had access, and people trusted me where they did not trust a lot of other photographers who were shooting for major news magazines or something like that. And having said that, though, I've been published all over in different places.
What was one of the first... I know in 1972 you were at the
Republican National Convention.
Oh, that place, what a joke that was.
At Miami Beach. That was my first assignment, actually, and I was very young, and it was with the St. Louis Outlaw. It was an underground newspaper.
Never heard of that one.
And it's not very famous there, Ken.
You're from St. Louis.
I'm originally from St. Louis.
St. Louis, Louis.
Okay. How do you refer to a St. Louis person from there?
I say I'm from St. Louis.
Yeah,
but I say I'm from Missouri. I'm from Missouri because a lot of people
they don't know what St. Louis
say
is.
Missouri, and people that usually say Missouri are from a more redneck background.
Where Cape Girardeau is.
Isn't that the show?
Sure, actually, Cape Girardeau is where Rush Limbaugh was born.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
if not born, he surely caused a lot of trouble.
Oh, definitely have.
Now, I ask all guests who are going to come on to the show to give me a little précis of who they are and what they're talking about.
That word again?
Part of their biography.
The praecium?
Praecy.
P-R-E-C-I-S. So you precede this. You precede that.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Something like that.
Somewhere between a biography and a CV,
it's kind of
biography.
But does the precise have to be precise?
You got to be precise.
You do.
With the
precise? Yes, and concise.
Concise.
You,
that means sharp, folks.
You say so it's been 40 years now, since 1972, you've been doing this, and you say you've documented people's resistance to war. So what do you mean by the term resistance to war, Oren?
Resistance to war, people that were protesting the wars. Wars that are seemingly never-ending ever since I got involved in 1972.
Oh, it never ends. Didn't you know that?
Vietnam, Vietnam, and went all the way into... into the wars in Central America, the United States was kind of doing it by proxy after Vietnam, I guess they finally got involved and got enough courage to have a real war that they called a real war, and that was in Grenada, and then it
got about
to,
that one.
Yeah, and then they got enough courage to go out and kill a bunch of people from Iraq and other places.
Well, they have to, you know. They believe in that.
Why, they do.
There's a lot of money in it, really.
Yeah, sure.
Did you ever see the book Overthrow? A book came out about 2 years ago, and it demonstrates 20 military conflicts that the United States have been involved in since 1885 or something like that.
Well, of course.
And all but two were to advance economic gain by businessmen.
Well, how do you think Big Daddy Warbucks came to be Big Daddy Warbucks?
We should talk about that someday, you know.
Big Daddy Warbucks.
One of the things I photographed, I mean, from anti-war rallies, one of the ones that wasn't that far away, I mean, far back, was in 2004, I believe, in New York City. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because a great so-called leader just passed away recently, Margaret Thatcher.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And what I guess she was really known as a big compatriot of Ronald Reagan. Well, in 2004, in the streets of Manhattan, there were people around carrying signs that said, Ronald Reagan, not dead enough yet. I'm not making judgment. I'm just saying what I saw and photographed. But.
Wow.
Well, that's your job. I mean,
as a photojournalist, that's your job. Go out there and shoot what's there.
Can photographers make news, or are you just taking pictures of news?
No, we can't necessarily make news unless we walk the other side of the camera.
Going back to that Hearst newspaper thing, remember he sent Remington or some famous artist down to the Spanish-American War in 1898, and the guy writes back and says, there's nothing happening, it's all calm down here. And Hearst said, you write the pictures, I'll make the war.
There you go.
You know?
Well, they had to do that in those days sometimes.
Yeah.
You gotta sell newspapers, don't forget that.
Well, I think and in all honesty, just about anywhere you go, if you really look around very closely, you're going to find something to take photographs of that has a social or some sort of a social value.
Certainly. Right here in River City could find something.
Oh, my God. I've only been here. I just moved from, Ann and I actually moved from Vermont last year to here. And
it's when we met you guys.
Yeah.
And it's
freshly transplanted.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing some of the things that we're finding out and people we're talking to about potential photo documentaries like in Delavan Grider neighborhood.
Hey, I rode my bike through
Bridge.
There so many times.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know much about the Peace Bridge neighborhood, but the Delavan Grider, I rode my bike through there so many times when I was growing up, you know.
Delavan Grider has one of the highest rates of cancer, diabetes, hypertension in the entire state of New York.
Wow.
So there's a lot to be said there. There's a lot to be said around the Peace Bridge because of the asthma and because of the trucks that are going through. Thanks to NAFTA, that they're just flying through there, and no respect for the people that live there. There's a ton of things to photograph. I can walk around the block, and I'll find something to photograph. Maybe not a war. Hopefully not a war.
Well, I hope not.
More power to you, Orin, for raising the consciousness, you know, of the people in this way. In fact, you remind me of something Marshall McLuhan said. He said that art is anything you can get away with.
Yeah.
And he also called the artist the enema of society.
There you go.
Who is that guy, huh?
So I think, actually, you know, you're a laxative on the body politic.
Well, thank you very much. I've never been called a laxative before, but I'll cherish that and I'll put that into my CV.
Your CV.
Because they've been moving lately, a little laxative wouldn't hurt.
Now, Orin is saying CV, like in Carl Victor, not CD, like in the latest Ramones album or something.
Showing my age. Yeah, you got that right.
You know, you're all over the place. You know, as I say, you're going from this country to that country and that country.
He's everywhere.
And they sound like kind of dangerous assignments.
To me,
wars going on and people killing each other and
turning over
in the middle businesses of coming
and
in and having conflicts with the Native American and the Native Indians.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
it's a constant thing here.
I mean, do you ever fear for your life?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's part of it, I think. I think that, yes, I've feared for my life before, but I've feared for my life now more than I'm now. After 40 years, I look back and go, "Oh my God, I could have killed myself.
Yeah,
I got killed
sure
a lot more than when I was
standing over there
when I was doing it." Because sometimes I knew this was what I was doing, and I didn't. I tried to use common sense as much as possible, but tried to get the photograph I was out to get. So. But now, again, looking back, I'm going, oh, my God.
Well, it's almost as if looking through the lens protects you because you don't have the peripheral vision, so you don't see that bullet shooting around your head, you know? Right? Yeah. You know, yeah. You're looking through that lens.
Well, a couple of things.
Never saw the bullet.
A couple of things. Yeah. Tearing down the barrel of a gun just to see where the bullet came from.
Yeah.
But, a couple of things I kind of wanted to mention about some of the silly things that have happened that have put my life a little bit in jeopardy, or at least did some stupid things. Uh-huh. In Nicaragua, in the border between Nicaragua and Honduras on the Rio Coco, we went up a couple Rio hundred.
On the Atlantic side.
On the Atlantic side, a couple hundred kilometers upriver. And the people I was with ran out of gasoline for our boat. We ran out of water, and we ran out of food. So the only thing we had left were Coca-Cola and beer.
Oh,
and the boat wouldn't run on Coca-Cola.
It wouldn't run on Coca-Cola, but we ran on beer.
That's enough for me.
Finally made it back down, but those are some of the things. And actually, Ann and I were in a situation not too many years ago where we were with some indigenous leadership in Chile, which they actually call Mapuche territory.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going back to a meeting. We had a human rights lawyer with us, and one of the Mapuche resistance people was driving.
Uh-huh.
And we hit a bump in a road with a Jeep that Alfredo was driving. When it came back down from the bump, the Jeep started turning over.
Oh, yeah.
And Alfredo, the driver, was thrown out of the car. And Ann and I ended up with broken ribs. And so did the sort of the yeah.
I'm well, of course, that Jeep didn't have any.
Now, Ann, what got you involved? Like, did you say, you're not going down there without me?
Yeah, that
initially,
happened.
Or did he invite you down?
No, a lot of the trips Oren went
that
by
song,
himself.
Take me along?
No.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, like, the Central America trips, especially to Chiapas and Nicaragua, was just Oren leading delegations down while I did other things up in Vermont. But then in 2004, we started traveling internationally together through our work on at the UN level. So from that, we started going down to Brazil and to Africa, various places in Africa and Indonesia and
now
and
UN
Europe
level.
And so on.
Elaborate a little bit on that.
You don't go to a place where it's cold, do you?
Well, gosh, yeah. Unfortunately, we had to
really
follow
cold.
The UN around, and you know, the UN would go to Copenhagen or Poznan, Poland in December. You
now
know,
you
basically
talking.
Never got to see the sun.
Now you're
so
talking.
That was yeah, that kind of sucks.
But Seattle, you
but
know,
anyway,
like that,
yeah, we between the UN climate conventions and the UN biodiversity conventions, the Forum on Forests and the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, we're basically going to these things and advocating for indigenous people's rights and forest protection and so on.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I said, you have to follow the UN around. So as a result of that, we got to see a lot of the world.
So how many miles is on your camera?
Oh, boy, I never ever thought of that, Ann.
You got to think about that. How many miles on that camera? Yeah. How many frames have you shot?
It's
well, yeah, it's a good way to
six
put that.
Continents
yeah.
Yeah.
Six continents
worth.
Six continents worth.
I mean, being a photographer, I look at the technical aspect. What kind of camera you're slinging? What kind of lenses are you predominantly using? What kind of conditions had that camera gone through? Have you wore it out yet? Is it a digital camera, a film camera?
What do you use?
Yes.
What do you use to get your many of your pictures?
Now it's digital. I use Nikon. I've always used Nikons basically all my life. And in 2003, I switched from film to actual digital. And the reason why I was down in Chiapas, I actually brought together a bunch of journalists to go into the middle of the Selva Lacandon jungle because there was a bunch of stuff going on where indigenous people were going to be thrown out. There was a threat of violence, and we went down and some journalists and I went down to document what was going on. And one of the people we went with just got back from Palestine, and he was shooting digital. And he was telling me, well, look, I like film, but if you're in Palestine and you're in a situation where you need a dark room, there ain't none there.
Oh,
so, but you can usually find electricity, and you can sometimes find line out to get your photos out. But it's just too hard, and that kind of made me think. And that's when I switched over to digital.
Right. So what year was that again?
2003.
That's about right. They said by 2005, everything just about turned over to digital.
I lost all kind of money on my cameras. My film cameras were worth nothing.
Now let's talk a little bit about, you know, pick one or two of these photos of yours, and we will refer the people to your website so they can see these pictures. Because obviously, unless you have the 3D radio, which
that's
we keep
correct.
Telling people to
you
purchase,
you got to get the 3D radio. Come on!
You cannot see these photos.
Stop wasting time.
Okay, well, let's see. Here's a photograph right now with a person.
Okay.
And he has like his head wrapped that you cannot see who it is. He is behind a chain link fence.
Yeah.
and he has the upside down McDonald's arches.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
And he's cutting he's cutting the wire of the of the fence with a wire cutter.
Yeah.
And
is this in the Mideast?
No, this is actually in Cancun, Mexico, during the World Trade Organization meetings in 2003.
You like McDonald's, I take it.
And it's an upside-down McDonald's. And
T-shirt, on logo on his T-shirt.
Logo on his T-shirt. Right. And the reason why people were doing this is, I guess, not too far away from there that day, the South Korean farmer committed suicide protesting the WTO and said that...
On top of that fence.
On top of that fence that the WTO is killing farmers. Mm-hmm. He committed suicide. There was a tremendous battle around the fence with police and with anti-WTO protesters. Ah. And so I was right in the middle of it taking photographs. And I usually the police scare me a whole lot more than people like this.
Oh, yeah.
Now, did he succeed in getting that hole big enough so people could crawl through?
Yeah, he did.
Whoa. What lens were you using?
Let's see. I was using some kind of a zoom lens, and I don't exactly know. It was an Nikon lens, and I don't exactly know.
Oh, okay.
I have to be really honest with you. I spend less time on knowing the actual photographic technique of things as it is that what I'm trying to do is capture the image.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's understandable, because you're working under pressure at that point.
Yeah, so...
You want to get that
sometimes
shot.
I'm very, photographic equipment ignorant. I just want my camera to damn it work, and hopefully I know enough to make it work.
Welcome to 1980, Oren.
I know. So where's the film camera at today that you don't use anymore?
Actually, one that I have left is on a shelf at our house.
It's
a decoration.
Oh. It's a knickknack.
It's a knickknack right up to it, but right up next to a magazine that says it's photojournalism dead. So.
Right. Oh! Unfortunately, a lot of that going around.
Yeah, you can see.
Now, all right, let me read a little bit about what you've... Ben, Oren has been behind rebel lines photographing the struggles of indigenous peoples in Mexico, land occupations in Brazil. He's worked extensively in the forests and indigenous communities of Nicaragua and covered other indigenous struggles for autonomy and land rights in Chile, Brazil, Paraguay, Canada, and the United States. He has documented demonstrations at national and international.
You got to have a lot of miles on that camera.
Fora. That's not a word you encounter often.
You're
it means the plural of forum.
Yeah, you don't hear much that word.
Yeah, including UN summits, World Bank meetings, U.S. Democratic and Republican. Now, were you conventions? Now, were you doing this before you met Ann, or did Ann kind of influence you into some of these other directions?
How'd you get
Ann? Did you take him into some directions he hadn't formally been working in?
Well, we sort of met through the work. Let's say it that way. So he was doing it before he met me, and I was doing it before I met him.
Let me get this straight then. You were shooting before you met Oren, right?
No, she wasn't photographing.
I was doing other activism work.
Okay.
And Oren was also doing activism work in addition to his photography, and we met through the activism work, and then we started doing that.
So you were a thorn in the government's side.
Yes, right? Basically. Yeah. I stole Oren away from St. Louis and brought him up to Vermont.
That's a rough job. I don't know how you did that. How did you tolerate living in a place like Vermont?
Well, it was really nice for the first 20 years, and then it started to get smaller and smaller. And
that about hanging with by your thumbs.
Yeah,
too.
a lot of things going on that we weren't too happy with. A lot of people coming up from New Jersey and sort of making McMansions everywhere.
I read an article about that somewhere in a magazine that talking about. That they were buying land in the Green Mountains or somewhere, and all of a sudden you'd be driving along, a chunk of woods would disappear, and a house would pop up like a week later.
Big houses.
Which is crazy. You think about how much it costs to heat, and people are building these ginormous houses on a given day in the winter about 30 degrees colder than Buffalo.
Yeah, and let's build a big house there with high ceilings and a lot of glass and walls.
If you got the money, right? They don't care if they're spending $2,000 a month to heat a place.
Why should they care about that?
And so one of the reasons we moved here is actually because of the weather. It's much warmer.
Right now it is, folks. It's 80 degrees today here on the
Say that again. People still think Buffalo is the snow capital.
We're
not really.
Today on the day of May.
Yes. Happy May Day.
Now,
Oren, you take a lot of conscientious, socially conscious photographs. Is there a photographer whose work you return to again and again for inspiration?
Yeah, who's one that you
Or simply, you know, just to admire?
Somebody.
I like Ouija.
Didn't he take pictures of dead people, though?
Yeah, people that committed suicide, all kind of things in New York.
Good stuff. Look it up.
I guess photographers that used to work with Magnum Photo Agency, people like Carnell Kappa,
right,
who actually coined the term concerned photography, concerned photographer.
You get it.
Which I really, this is how I kind of really got involved. I was living in Paris at the time.
Oh, in springtime in April?
I don't know when exactly it was. It was in the mid-70s, and I was at the Left Bank looking at a book, and I saw a Robert Kappa book, just really struck me. And then I found out his brother was teaching at the International Center of Photography. He was the executive director, and I decided, I'm going to go there.
Yes.
And because of that, I ended up meeting all kind of different people that I admire. W. Eugene Smith.
Oh, you met him?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he was a fantastic person.
I loved him,
and
that guy.
He really told people off, too.
Yes,
he did. He didn't take anything from anybody, and he was
he a cigar chomper, hard drinker?
I know he's a hard drinker.
That's
I don't know about the actual cigar.
The old photographers, even locally here and on the newspaper, they're all hard drinkers and heavy cigar chomper.
That goes with the territory, doesn't it?
Sure, I guess. Especially
like the writers, the journalists too. So that means you're doubly indemnified.
Right.
You're a photo journalist,
right? Exactly,
photo journalist.
It's amazing he's still alive, man.
That's right. Keep an eye on him,
Hard
check and everything, you know.
Well, sometimes it does a tremendous job. Here, I wanted to show you a photograph here, which I know the viewers can't see.
Yes, they can. This is 3D radio.
This is an upside down tree. And this is in Nicaragua right after Hurricane Mitch in 1998.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And this was a mudslide that covered a town of people, and I don't know how many thousands of people were buried there.
It kind of looks like a desert. It's like half of it is desert and half of it is sky.
Yes. Well, just imagine that there's a couple thousand people buried in the mud right there, and I was standing on top of a mass grave taking those photographs.
Oh, wow.
And that does... screw with your head. It does screw with your head. And it's still, I mean, I look at that photo and I go, oh my God, it's changed my life forever. And it does make you sometimes want to drink.
Right. Do you find when you take pictures like this that you have to dissociate yourself? Kind of like they say nurses have to do in hospitals when they see, burn babies and things like that. You have to kind of like stop being so subjective and just get the job done?
I guess in some ways. In some ways. It's hard to describe, because I think when I'm doing that, I remember the mayor of the town, Posilitega, was talking, and I wasn't paying any attention to her. I was taking photographs of what was around me. Many times I actually don't see what's going on sometimes around me, because I'm focusing on something that I really need to photograph for what I'm trying to portray. So,
right.
I actually talked to somebody from Buffalo a few weeks ago, and she was saying that she just got back from New York, and she said there's so many people that are in the photojournalist business are very tired of their jobs right now, because they're just do everything that a magazine wants them to do.
Sure.
And they don't really feel like they're having an impact or anything else. And again, that's why I did not go the normal way. But my photos have had an impact.
Definitely.
Just to give a quick little story, in 2010, we found out that the governor of California, Arnold Inseminator, Schwarzenegger, he signed a deal with the governor of Chiapas, Mexico, for a carbon offset scheme where what would happen is if in Chiapas there would not be pollution occurring, especially in the pristine rainforest.
Yeah.
the way the carbon offsetting works, these forest carbon offsets, so polluting industries in California get to basically buy their way to continue polluting by buying forests in Chiapas, Mexico that are protected. So they say that those forests are sequestering or storing the carbon that they're continuing to pollute. So they don't have to stop polluting. Mm. Yeah. They can just protect the forest.
I understand. What they do, they build this thing that takes all the, and it goes right down there, and it goes right to that spot there. It's like putting money in the bank kind of thing.
Somebody explained it as
that's what it is.
As like paying somebody to go on a diet for you.
Sure.
Sure.
And so if they lose enough weight and you total your two weights together and it goes down, then you can pretend that you've lost weight because they lost enough weight for both of you.
Sure, it works out perfectly.
That's been around like for 20 or 30 years now, right?
It's basically thanks to Al Gore. Al Gore brought us carbon trading at the UN Kyoto meeting in 1997.
Good old Al.
I think it was 97. I don't know. Anyway,
I can't,
it's hard to remember these dates anymore. Mm. They've all sort of mushed together
run
in your
together
head.
They do. Mushed together.
They do. They
but
do.
Anyway, it's thanks to Al Gore, Mr. Global Warming. He brought us
carbon. Mr. Global Warming.
Well, we've reached that halfway point in our show.
No
so,
way.
So we got to play the midpoint song.
We cannot have missed it. How did we get to that
And
quick?
Because, Oren, you've been such a globetrotter and you've traveled around and you have actually been in Brazil, we thought we'd play.
That's a place I want to go with, just to see this. Hey, if you've been to Brazil, have you seen the city of Brasilia?
No.
I haven't been to Brasilia, no.
How come no one never been to Brasilia?
I don't think anybody ever goes there. I don't. I'm not sure it exists.
I mean, we've been to Manaus.
It's only Sao Paulo.
That's one place I want to go and see is Brasilia.
Yeah. I mean, it's they carved that out of the rainforest to make this huge.
I want
to
see it.
I don't know if it really exists.
I want to find out.
I think it's a Disney city.
Probably.
You know, it's like a Disney world
for the monkeys. Or something. There you go.
Well, we decided we would play the midpoint song for tonight is Brazil by Xavier Cugat and his Waldorf Astoria Orchestra Chorus.
Yes.
I just had to say that whole thing.
I appreciate the whole thing being said.
Here's Xavier Cugat, Brazil from 1942. Brasil, brasileiro, meu mulato insoneiro, vou cantar-te no meu And that was Brazil by Xavier Cugat. Remember, wasn't he with Taro?
No.
That wasn't him?
No, he usually featured one of my other favorites, the Chiquita Banana girl.
Everybody Carmen Miranda.
That's
back
right.
in the 40s.
Yes.
That's right.
And
Chiquita Banana. Hey, since we made a big speech earlier in the show
did,
about the 30 ways photography is good
speech.
For you. Where we're still doing them, folks.
Yes.
So why don't we do that missing way? That missing way. It's the Appian way.
Not the Appian way that's missing.
Remember
with the Milky
that pizza?
Way.
How terrible that was! It was awful. Pizza.
That stuff. We should have left it on the Appian way. You could use it for pavers. How bad it was. Terrible stuff.
There's the right way, and there's the Appian way.
I'll take the left way, not no more the right way, the Appian way.
So this is 30-way number 8?
Yes.
Okay, so enlighten us. Yes.
Now.
You can hear the music in the background.
Oh, you can hear that music going back. Is that, now, that number 8, which one of the ones we supposed to have missed, is called Relating to People. Now, although it isn't always easy to take pictures of people, it's a good way of learning to relate to them better. That's one good thing about it. Now, when you look at taking photographs of people, you got your portrait, you can do that kind of way. That's one way related to people. You got weddings, that's one way you can take pictures related to people. What's not too good if you're a wedding photographer? You got to deal with a lot of problems with that because those brides want it right, and so do those brides' mothers. They don't care about the groom. He can just, you know, just stand in.
You're kind of like hurting the people.
Oh, yeah.
Wedding photographer.
Oh, yeah.
You're telling them where to go and where to stand. Get over there.
Get that kid in the right spot. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
You actually need a sheepdog.
You do.
Wouldn't you? A sheepdog would help in wedding
photography. A lassie kind of dog or some kind of wrangling dog. Like
wrangling.
Dog wrangler. It's like a wrangler. Those people wrangling those dogs over there. That kind of thing. You know.
We had a penguin wrangler on the show.
We
remember
sure
when Mark
did.
Caro was on a couple years ago?
Yes. He brought all those extra penguins when we had to keep them standing.
Penguin wrangler.
Out of the way. Stand there.
They hang out in a refrigeration truck wearing their tuxedos.
Get them out of the refrigerator. We can use the other 5 now. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Wrangling little rascals.
Oh, wringle, wrangle, jingy, jong, jangle. Mighty fine horse, I'm in love, of course, cause I got me a pretty woman's love. Wringle, wrangle, jingy, jong, jangle. Spurs on my boots, and I don't give a hoot, cause I got me a pretty woman's love. With a dollar's worth of beans, a new pair of jeans, got a woman to cook and wash. And things.
Oh, wrangle, wrangle, jing-a-jong, jangle.
Ha! If I die, I ain't a-gonna cry, cause I got me a pretty woman's love.
Wrangle, wrangle, wrangle.
But nonetheless, relating with people is a good thing that photography has been able to do for me. And I know for my esteemed guests here tonight, both of them can no doubt relate
to
that.
Oh, he is. He's steamed. Look how pissed off he is.
Coming out of his ears right now. Wow. Whew, watch out, folks. It's getting a little warm over here. But that's the beauty of photography, because you can take it anywhere in the world and relate to people some kind of way with, or they'll relate to you. What kind of camera you got there, buddy?
You know how people relate
pictures of this kind of.
What's the first thing a person looks at? Their own face in a picture.
They do.
You can be one of 20 or one of 40
They'll
in that big crowd, and they look
time.
For themselves. Where am I? Where am I?
You know, I mean, at the back of my head, well, how come I didn't move over that way more? Well, you didn't realize it at the time of taking a picture, did you? But stuff like that happens. Group
Why'd you put this picture of me? My eyes are closed. Yeah, but everybody else
like
looks good. You know, triage. You know, everybody else looks good. Sorry about that, honey. You know,
I did a group shot just recently of a big band down at the Color Musicians Club, and this one guy, in a great frame, when he finally got a good one, he hasn't decided to look at his shoes. And George goes, well, this is a beautiful shot, but why is he looking at his shoes? I don't know, George. I hit the shutter button, he wasn't. That's all I know.
That's right. He was shutting. He was shutting down.
He was definitely shutting down when my shutter button went off. But as I said, photography is one of the best ways that you can learn to relate to people, and people learn to relate back. Not only to you, but your camera, and also the location. All that stuff kind of comes together, the ball of wax, the location they're relating to. How do people relate to the location? What the situation is doing, how that relates to them, vice versa, to you as well. All these things come together with some type of relationship, all because of a camera and photography. And the first picture of a person that was taken, that person probably figured out the same thing. What are you doing with that thing? What is that thing? And all of a sudden, the photographer and that person had a conversation struck up so they could find out just what was going on and what it was. And from there, that guy probably went out and bought a camera, too.
Rainbow, rainbow.
Get up there.
And that was number 8 of one of the 30 ways photography can be good for you. Well, there's still one more, Ken.
Yes, one more. One more.
Because we skipped over number 9.
Yes, we did.
And what is number 9, Ken?
Well, number 9 happens to be. Number Are we ready to read number 9?
Number 9.
So that's number 9. There it is, right there. It says, stimulating your imagination.
Okay. Well, we'll be featuring that in a future program of the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour. So
keep those imaginations stimulated in the meantime.
Drink
more of that New Amsterdam gin.
Keep your hands above the table.
At all times. But check once in a while to see that your buddy has their pants on when the weather gets warm.
I do have my pants on.
It's the warmest day so far this year, and he's got his pants on. Go figure that one out.
Hey, guess what?
What?
Mr. Answer Man is back.
What?
Here I am.
Here he is. In fact, he's in the studio tonight.
I looked around, and there he was sitting right here. Wow.
He came down from on high in his invisible airplane from the Fortress of Solitude.
And that thing's mighty quiet. He's sitting chair.
He just, like, appears out of nowhere like this.
Boom. He's something.
Another amazing answer to a conundrum.
A conundrum has now been less conundrum. A less conundrum now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
canoodling. It's a canoodling conundrum.
One. Can we canoodle some more?
Yeah, canoodle.
I did a painting about canoodling.
Means to caress and
it's also
canoodle means getting, to caress or fondle or pet amorously.
But also. Yeah. But also, it's a catfish. A way of getting, it's called noodling.
That's right.
They take catfish. It's a really insane way of catching a catfish. You put your hand under a big rock and feel around and until something bites it. Yep. And if it's a catfish, you're okay.
That's called canoodling?
Yes.
Canoodling, yeah.
Wonder which came first.
I prefer the old style.
The amorous fondling or
the
catfish?
Fondling.
And at what point did they go, this is like amorous fondling?
That's right.
You know, in our outtake show.
At what point did that switch over?
In our outtake show, we talked about fish tackling.
Yes, we did.
So please, we recommend, go back to our outtake show and listen to this segment
please
on fish tackling.
Do.
Your timing is impeccable, Mr. Answer Man.
Yes,
it's impeccable.
Of course it is.
You know, and because I've been thinking about this. Mr. Answer Man, is it ever okay to lie?
Of course it is. Of course it is. Now, especially if your audience, when it comes to groups of people, if your audience can't discern between opinion and fact, you're okay. Remember that stupid commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness?
Yeah.
Well, you can bear as much false witness as you want if you use the mysterious straw man argument.
The straw man argument?
The straw man argument. It hypnotizes the stupid and befuddles the intelligent.
What?
No, wait, repeat that. Say that once more.
Yeah, comment.
Okay.
What is the straw man argument?
Oh, it hypnotizes the stupid and befuddles the intelligent.
Befuddles the... Oh, right.
If you listen to such commentators as Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck, you'll find that they very often rely on the straw man argument, putting forth like something like, oh, liberals hate freedom, .. Therefore, I do not, ..
Oh, yeah.
Where,
right.
Yes.
Sure.
So the straw, you put up a straw man and then beat it down.
And it can't stand up for itself because it makes no logical sense.
And people never question it.
Is that kind of like a tautology? Right? You know what a tautology is?
That's another word.
No, I don't.
You've been all over the world.
But we don't know what tautology is. I've just learned about
canoodling.
Canoodling.
All over the world.
That's what this show is all about.
That's right.
Listen,
learn,
and learn.
And laugh.
Correct.
That's right.
And not only just
absolutely
one form of canoodling, we don't know about two forms
of canoodling. Two forms of canoodling. That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's Orrin Langell's chiming in here.
And remember, more in the water.
And another way around lying or retruthing something is to state it as, I think so. I think the Bible says this. I think the Constitution says that.
So I guess you can get away with anything.
Sure.
If you
pretty
add,
much can.
That's kind of like adding that term, whatever you end, whatever statement you can say in bed. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Or with his pants off.
Right.
How what does that line go? Remember? You hear that in college?
Photojournalist over here has something to say about that. He's probably seen all kinds of situations along those lines.
I forgot.
He thinks so.
Or the favorite phrase is something.
Some people say, yes, that's I think that's a Fox terminology that some people say.
Some people say. There you go. Yeah. You mean Fox Television? Or Fox Network?
Whatever those people
Fox
are.
Fox News. Yeah. Fox News.
Oh, wow.
Think fortune cookies, yeah.
Yeah. Fortune cookies. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And remember, repeating things always makes it more real until things eventually evolve.
It intensifies.
Into fact.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. It must be true. This
so keep wearing pants,
time.
America.
Keep wearing pants.
And keep lying. Keep
well, thank you. Now I know exactly what to do.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Answer Man, thank you for coming down in the studio again, and we'll
love having.
He won't be here every time in person, but we'll
the
miracle of
time
recorded sound.
Yes, yes. Like, we'll be back. Record, but today we have him right here, 3D.
Now, didn't they say that indigenous peoples, when they were first having their picture taken, they thought you were taking part of their soul?
Yes.
Do you know a little bit about that, Oren?
I just know the story that you know, that's a conception people have. I don't know, Ann. You probably know more than that.
Well, now I know, you know, when we've gone to some of these very poor villages, you take the photo and people immediately come up to you and they want you to pay them. So
really?
You learn to relate to people in a different kind of a way.
That's right.
They want to get paid, huh? You got to love that one. I'm telling you, it's amazing how that caught on real fast about, I can relate to that. Yeah, my picture, me, camera, money. Okay, yeah.
You probably can't go anywhere in the world without finding a Coke can. Either,
or a picture of Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you were just talking that story.
What was the name of that movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Right,
yeah, right where they dropped
movie.
The bottle.
Yeah, yeah, I thought it was the best movie I've ever seen. We just bought it. Hey, look at this thing.
What was that, in the Outback in Indonesia or Australia?
Yeah, I think it was Australia.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I remember that film. Yeah,
I will say that. You haven't been to Australia, have you?
Yeah.
What? You've been to Australia?
Australia, New Zealand.
Oh, I thought I'd go pull a fast one, somebody that haven't been yet, you know?
Fiji.
Give me a break here.
Well, to be fair, we spent most of our time in Tasmania, not on the mainland.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
a beautiful place.
Is it? You don't hear much about that. You hear about Australia and you hear about New Zealand, but the Tasmania, you just don't seem
gorgeous.
To hear about.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful place. And people used to say that you can tell the Tasmanians because they had, that you can see a scar on their neck because they had to cut the other head off.
Okay.
Oh. right.
And they also have a really horrendous record, their ancestors did, of killing indigenous peoples that live there. Very horrendous record. They basically went from one side to the other and just pushed all through Tasmania with guns and killing people.
Wow.
Making land for themselves.
Making land for themselves.
That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
It does.
We're going to land here in New England, Vermont someplace, and we're going to go across this country, and we're going to settle where we're supposed to be selling, a land that somebody already settled on.
Well, you know, like Sherman's March to the Sea? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the white people did to the American Indian here in this country.
That's right.
They just marched them to the sea. It just took them 300 years.
To do it, but they did it.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned something during the song about Chiapas.
Right.
So, what did you want to say about Chiapas?
I guess what I was trying to say before is we were getting into the thing about carbon offsets and things like that, about the governor of California made this deal with the governor of Chiapas about this carbon offset thing. Well, it so happened that we got word of it because we were very involved with people in Chiapas, and we found out that for this deal to go through, there was a whole section of the jungle in the Selva Lacandone that indigenous people were supposed to be moved out of because indigenous people on the land made it no longer a pristine forest. However, indigenous people are the people that take care of the forest.
Let me get that.
It's the reason why the forest is there.
That's the reason why the forest is there, because indigenous people take care of it. But, things have gotten so insane and there's so much money involved.
Well, it is.
And here's a photograph right here of two young girls hugging each other.
Nice shot. Too.
And this is in Amador Hernandez in the middle of the jungle. I had to drive a day in the back of a pickup truck on old road, bouncing, and then the last day, 15 kilometers on horseback to get there. We were invited to the community, and the night before we were there, before these two girls actually, before they hugged each other, we were at a community meeting where the people in the community were worried that the Mexican military, which is why we went in there anyway, was going to come in within 4 days and they were deciding if they were going to fight the Mexican military or not. And they said, yes, they were going to fight the military if they were going to be forcibly relocated. The girls, you know, kept on being girls,
little girls
as little girls are. But myself and a couple other people, we were there and at an invitation for the community. And we didn't leave when the Mexican military was supposed to come in. And we stayed there. The Mexican military did not come in because we were there with video cameras and still cameras.
All right.
And then we took the photos out, got them published all over the world. I had different shows in Amsterdam and various places. That community is still there today, and it's flourishing. They're organizing other people about some of these carbon schemes in the jungle there,
like
trying to take care of their territory. But I wanted to point that out because that's kind of the power of photojournalism and the power you can have with a camera, and that feels good when you can do something like that.
Now, this is on your website.
That's on the website. Actually, as soon as you turn on the website, that's the first photograph you'll see.
What time of day was that shot?
Early in the morning. I mean, very, very early.
Look at the haze in the background.
Yeah.
Now, is that a natural haze, or is that due to the camera angle?
No, that was just natural. Mm.
That's the jungle.
That's the jungle. It's in the middle of.
How much area is that jungle occupying?
Oh my God, I don't even know the actual.
I think at this point it's the largest intact rainforest north of the Amazon. But at this point, that's not saying a lot
north,
because you know the rainforest Amazon. North of the Amazon have been really
they're doing what they
devastated.
Can.
But it is the largest rainforest in Mexico, and in the state of Chiapas, it occupies.
So
one
I never pictured Mexico with rainforest. I always picture Mexico as desert.
The part of the state, of the country, it has Oaxaca and Chiapas have quite lush rainforests.
Now, where are those states
in relationship
Mexico?
To Mexico City? Yeah.
They're right on the Isthmus of Tehuantepec, which is right where Guatemala comes up to Mexico. So right in Central America, basically.
Guacamole.
Right where Mexico and Central America meet.
Yeah.
Bump up against one another.
Oh, yes. By the way, on the date that we're recording this, Cinco de Mayo is right around the corner.
Whoa.
That's right.
But, of course, Cinco de Mayo is an American holiday.
That's what they know about in Machu Picchu, huh?
They don't celebrate Cinco de Mayo
down
in Mexico.
What are crazy Americans doing again now, you know?
Except for that one small community. There's one small community where they do, I think.
Yeah.
Where the actual battle was taking place, I believe, right?
Well, you know what happened, don't
Independence.
You? Some guy invented a chainsaw.
Well, you can invent a chainsaw, but somebody else has to be able to want to pay you to
That's
do
right.
that, right?
Yeah, I love that joke about, well, you know what the guy said? So the guy said, look, I'm going to buy a brand new saw, and I'm going to cut down more trees.
Now, Oren, people can, of course, go online, but are you going to be, like, putting some of these photos somewhere local where people can see these?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be part of a four-person show. Do you want to talk about it? It's at Casa de Arte.
Casa de Arte, yeah, right on Elmwood between Allen and North Street. There's a gallery, and so Oren is going to be part of a four-person show. Two people from Chiapas. There'll be textiles and weavings from Chiapas as well. And then Oren and another photographer with photographs from Chiapas.
Where are your cameras? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
I always tell photographers when they got shows, wear their cameras so people know you're the photographer.
It's your badge, your identity.
Wear your camera.
That's true.
But the show opens, I think, June 22nd.
Yeah,
it was first day of summer.
Yep, well, 7 o'clock.
I want to warn the patrons out there who listen to the show, parking can be tough. I know I've been to the gallery more than once, but it's worth it because it's a beautiful gallery. It's a very personal gallery, and it's a very sociable gallery at the same time.
And it's a social cause type of gallery,
so
too.
You'll enjoy the show and everyone who's there.
We encourage and urge all our listeners to make that show. I've been to Casa de Arte on several occasions. It is a very nice place.
It is. And Rick, he's a wonderful guy, him and his wife. And it's really like
they're often mixed media shows too. It's not just photography or painting.
Right.
You know, painting and sculpture, and of course there's interesting authentic.
They even did a fashion show there last year.
Yeah, and they sometimes will have music.
Yes,
there's going to be music. There's going to be a marimba, marimba band.
Mexican food.
There will be.
You'll be in for a nice treat.
Yeah, I really urge people to come out and see it. Just not because I'm showing my work, but I think it'll be a lot of fun.
That's a good reason to come in the first place.
That's right. And the other thing too, I really want to say that photography and art and everything. We need to think of the cultural aspects of it all. It's just not a lot of people say, well, you don't need words to explain your photos. It just should stand there by itself. And I disagree because as a photojournalist, it's more of an experience than just the photo.
There's also a direction on
there's
that.
A story with it.
There's a story with it, and not only is there a story with it, there's a cultural aspect of it that's missing if you don't explain the whole thing. Yeah, although, I mean, with other forms of photography, I can understand where people say it should stand on its own. I hope my photos stand as their own.
You know, as I tell like the few students who want to go into photojournalism, and they don't seem to really get the gist of it. You can't explain but so much to them how important it is when you hit that shutter button, what that shot has to say, and then you get somebody who can back it up with words.
He's gesticulating toward Anne, by the way.
Yes. It is like it really comes to grips to and make a person look at it. And I like them to be smacked between the eyes when they see the shot and read the text. That's what I like to see happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm a firm believer.
That really has nothing to do with what I was just going to bring up.
But bring it up anyway. We wanted to bring it out and bring it up anyway. Yeah.
What you're trying to attempt in your photography, Oren, is what noted photography Henri Cartier-Bresson describes as the decisive moment. And I think that might be a good thing for you to go out on, the last thing you say before we go into the closing song. So if you would please read the paragraph that you had submitted as to what is the decisive moment for us.
Okay, to me it's when light composition and the subject unite, and as a concerned photographer, my goal is not just to document and expose the harsh reality of injustice, much of which is linked to the struggle for the land, but to inspire viewers to participate in changing the world while helping empower those striving for justice, because they know that the photographs of their struggle are revealed to a larger audience.
I think that says it all, don't you?
Yeah, I'm standing in that corner. I really am. Because, see, it gets to the point, it's some photographers, I'm going to say Oren over here, is one of those who got it to the point where it just past photojournalism, it starts knocking on the door as art. You know, you can start seeing art in the shot, and you can start seeing a whole different view of it. It just gets to that next level. And you throw somebody like Anna into the mix, you're really pushing it up there then. You know what I'm saying? It's,
writing about it.
Yeah.
And agitating.
Yeah, and agitating. You know, it's like the fish, why the washing machine?
What's I was just thinking of this.
Not those spins thing. The guy goes like back and forth. You know, I'm the kid. Don't put your arm in there.
Right.
Well,
right.
Going up with one. Right. And that's what's really working, you know? It's really working. That's how photography is relating to people.
Point number eight.
That's right.
Point number eight. Okay. Now, we are very touched by having you two social agitators, you conscientious photographers and writers. And I wish I could come up with a good way of describing you both.
But,
this has been an extremely...
Well, not twins, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You can't use that in the description.
Right. So thank you, Anne, for coming on the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour. Oren, thank you for making an appearance.
Well, thanks so much for having
me. Yeah, Carl and Ken, thank you. I mean, we've seen each other from many different openings now, and it's been good to get together and finally do this.
Oh, and where do we go to get to your website?
It is photo, P-H-O-T-O, and then my last name is langelle.org. It's photolangel.org.
And we'll make a link to our website so you can find it that way. And thank you for coming on the Burnham and Dodge Art Hour.
We appreciate that very much.
We're going to go out on a song here by Fats Waller.
Oh, one of my favorite guys. I've lost weight since then, but I still like the fat part.
This is from 1935.
Ah.
And it's called You Fit Into the Picture.
Hey, beautiful.
Belong, 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 right. right in my arms. You fit into my love life. Where on earth did you hide? You belong, 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 right here by my side. You're the one that I've looked for. I'm so glad that you came. My heart is afraid for no one but you, dear. You put into the picture, yes, yes. Don't deny me those charms.